This is going on at the beginning of the show. You know how I like to put a candid moment at the beginning of the show?
I don't want to watch I Can't Stand Where I Live.
I think I'll just mark it in my little book.
Right. Let me know when to start, Mr. Dedrick. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon. We have been reading a lot of your letters, and most of you have been saying, we love Ian Boothby as host. We're not really sure about David Dedrick, so we're bringing in another host today. Michael Roberts is
here. Good evening.
Good evening. And I've been told that David might be somewhere in the building.
He said he'd show up eventually.
Yeah. If you say, well, here's the thing. It's the old legend. If you say David's name five times,
right,
he will appear.
Five times. Okay.
Okay. Well, let's just try that.
All right. All right. David Dedrick.
David Dedrick.
David Dedrick.
I'm getting creeped out.
Yeah.
Do we have to look in this mirror, and do we have to be naked?
Well, I thought it might help.
Okay, two more times.
David Dedrick.
Okay, here we go. All right, everybody. David Dedrick.
How come I'm naked?
Hey, David, welcome to Sneaky Dragon.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. Glad I could make it.
Nice to see you. We do
have nice to see that much of you, though.
That's right. Actually, when we're doing this, traditionally you do it in the dark, right? Don't you turn off the lights when you're doing the Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary?
Is that what you? Is that what I don't do it that way? But
oh, what? How do you Bloody Mary, David?
Well, I think it's you have to stand in the bathroom.
Okay.
You have to turn around. You have to turn in a circle.
Turn around, bright eyes,
and say Bloody Mary five times.
Okay.
And on the fifth Bloody Mary, you'll have a delicious drink handed to you by a waiter.
Wait, will this drink have clam juice in it?
That would be that's not a Bloody Mary, that's a Bloody Caesar.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right. What goes into Bloody Mary? Let me turn to Michael and ask. Michael, what goes into a Bloody Mary?
I have no idea. I'm going to guess vodka, tomato juice, and Tabasco sauce.
Yeah, I think that's close to right.
Nice. And something about Canadian, isn't that some...
The Canadian is the Clamato juice.
Which is
a clam and tomato juice.
Yeah, but what's it called?
That's the Caesar.
That's invented in Canada.
That's a Canadian
specific.
That's a Canadian Woo-hoo! Oddity. Yes.
Yeah. What is
who isn't?
Clam juice? How'd that come about?
But not as clam juice. Clam and tomato juice.
Okay.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's Clamato.
Take one step back. That's what you're asking.
Yeah. Well, take one step back.
Because someone was watching the Vernon Shirley. They're like Clamato, Clamato, clams and tomatoes. That is brilliant. Combine the two together. Got some clam nectar.
Right.
Have you ever bought clam nectar? Yes, you can.
No.
You can buy clam nectar in a can.
Or as a sherbet.
If you're going to be making as a sherbet. Mm. Well, as a gelato.
Right.
As a gelato flavor, clam nectar. Those gelato guys are crazy. But yeah, if you're making clam chowder, you don't not only need clams, but you also need a can of clam nectar, which you can pour into the...
That's what it was for.
Okay, this is all making sense. Yeah. So has anyone ever made a Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated drink?
I can answer to that. Possibly in Chechnya.
Because it's rabbit stew? Is Haas and Pfeffer?
Haas and Pfeffer is rabbit stew, that's right.
That is true.
So it would have to be a... What would it have in it then?
Well, you'd have to have rabbits that have been incorporated.
Incorporated.
That for tax reasons. And I understand this because most rabbits, they multiply. And you can only deduct so many children in Russia. You know, and so at one point you have to incorporate your family, declare yourself a business, and then start selling your children as food.
There you go. Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated.
Okay.
That also happens in Saskatchewan.
We've solved the problem.
Mystery solved.
There wasn't,
mystery solved.
There wasn't a problem.
Yay!
There wasn't a problem. We created the problem and we solved it all in one. That's awesome of us.
That is not a bad idea, by the way. Michael does a lot of TV and film.
Yeah, I kind of think we've kind of short.
Yeah, but I want to pitch something to Michael first, and then we'll get into his credits.
Okay.
All right, Michael, how about this?
Yeah.
It's a mystery show. Every week, say you're solving a mystery.
It certainly is.
Okay, so mystery solving. So it's the Michael Mysteries, we call them.
Oh, I like it.
All right. And the deal is, though, at the end of every mystery, it's really you that did it.
Do I get away with it at the end of the mystery?
Yeah, that's it. First, it's like you elaborately framing somebody, and then at the end, you go like, but you all know it was me. Wink. And then you take off.
Yeah, I like it. That's a really good idea.
But did you want to list this gentleman's resume, David? It sounded like that's what you wanted to do.
Well, I just felt like we kind of had... We didn't really introduce him. We just said his name.
No, we don't do that.
We don't introduce people?
That's for squares, man.
That's for squares.
Yeah, dude.
Let's get hip, daddy-o.
That's right. Why don't we all put on three-piece suits, man, and just like, all right, fine, conform. All right, go ahead. Introduce him proper then.
I am introducing.
Yeah,
wait
Johnny
a second,
setup. Johnny setup.
But I'm not even.
You don't even know who I am, really, do you?
Yeah, no, it's true.
You're making me do it.
I did this elaborate sketch to introduce you. Did you miss that? I set the stage.
Everyone knows me.
Costumed all of us.
Everyone knows me.
I know. And but have you ever been introduced to you in such a delightful way?
I don't know if you knew this, but I'm like a regular on Sneaky Dragon.
Well, they
I am
know
often
you especially
on the shows.
From the big dragon costume you wear.
That's right.
And on the street
corners,
yeah.
I hand out Sneaky Dragon brochures and also advertise Little Caesars $5 pizzas.
Yeah. That's right. David started off on the show as the drummer. He was Stick Stedrick.
Stick Stedrick, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then you used to come in and go, "What's the problem, Mr. Boothby?"
Yeah.
That was how we used to
call
Yeah, just in that voice, yeah. Oh, hey there, Mr. Boothby. What's happening?
Gosh. Yeah. And then your voice changed.
It did.
You started singing
for the worst.
For the worst, yeah. And then
we can all agree on that.
Yeah, and then you became the co-host over time. Mm-hmm. But as the co-host, introduce this fucking guy.
Okay, everyone. Well, then we're going to welcome to the show Mike Roberts, who is well known for his role as Uncle Fester in the new Addams Family. Wouldn't you say that's something that you've...
That's probably the biggest part. Yeah, for sure.
Something that I saw you in recently was you played, was it Chet?
I did play a guy named Chet.
In Hot Tub Time Machine? Was
yes.
that your name? Yes.
Yeah, you were Chet in Hot Tub Time
You were the
Machine.
Desk clerk, as they call it in England, or desk clerk, as we call it in Ethiopia.
You might know him as well from Alien Trespass.
Yes, I played Bubba.
That's correct.
You played Bubba? Were you Trespass?
I've played Bubba three times, I think, in other shows.
Well, now I'm gonna run a test by you.
You're also in
The Most Wonderful Time of the Year.
Yes.
Your first name was Chet. Your last name was?
I have no idea.
Chetsky.
Wojorski. How would you spell your name?
Wojorski.
We have a winner. Very good.
I was the evil toy store owner.
Okay.
Who refused to stay open past noon on Christmas Eve. Yeah.
Wait, that's not bad.
That doesn't
that's
sound
a guy
that
who
evil.
Likes
that seems
to
like
have
a good guy.
A good respect for Jesus.
He
that
did.
Sounds like
yeah, he did.
And this guy's some kind of Christian.
What's he doing?
Get him!
He lets his employees go home early on Christmas Eve so they can get ready for Christmas.
You're the anti-Scrooge.
Yeah. I was.
Strange...
It was an awesome little Christmas movie.
But you were evil for doing that?
Well, like I was sort of the villain because I then get beat up in the parking lot. I mean, as much as
a
Christmas movie can be, that I get hit with a garbage can and knocked over when I get into a bit of a fight with a guy. So,
well, wait, what's the guy's problem with you that you're not?
Because I didn't sell the bike. I had a bike in the window, and his girlfriend wants to buy the bike. She says, "I'll be here on Christmas Eve to get it." And I said, "Well, we close at noon. Be here by noon."
Right. Sensible.
She shows up afternoon.
Right.
They see me leaving, so they bang on the door to make the alarm go off. The police come. When I come to check the alarm, they walk across the street and go, "Oh, good, you're open again, and we can get the bike." And then I go, "No, this is stupid." And you know what? Now that I'm saying it out loud, I really was the good guy. And they were terrible.
So what they did was they set the mall on fire. So when the fire trucks came, you go, "Oh, you're open today, eh? You son of a bitch."
Yeah, that's right.
Closing at noon.
Man, I never looked at it that way.
What a strange movie.
Yeah. Hugely popular on TV at Christmas. I get recognized more for that movie and another Christmas movie that I did around the same time called Christmas Town,
which
I play an elf at the North Pole at Santa's factory, really.
Oh, I assume.
And I
didn't think you were like a hobo elf or just
No.
Now, wouldn't it be terrible, by the way, if you were an elf at the North Pole that couldn't get a job with Santa? So you've got to just like hunt polar bears for meat and you're like in the woods. It's just like
you're in the local town and people go, "Oh, you're an elf. Hey, you work at Santa's thing?"
No, I don't.
I thought everybody worked up at Santa's.
No, there's just not a lot of it. They're full up right now.
Really? I saw a sign outside.
Look, fuck you.
Okay, sorry.
There's only one other job for
Show me the whorehouse. Tiny whorehouse.
There's only one other job for elves in that town, and that's being a dentist.
That's right.
If you're not a dentist or working at the factory,
Oh, you must be a dentist.
So you were an elf. What
no, yeah, I was an elf, and I think that this one's really cool because he didn't have a name, and the lead actor in the movie goes, "Well, I just want to say something. What's your name?" And Mike. So he's like, "Hey, Mike." And so I all through it, then at different points, then I get called Mike.
Mike
and it's just
elf.
Now it's so funny when they watch it. Go, "He just called you Mike." It's like, yeah, I know. It's what it was called.
He's a method actor.
Yeah. So, but I get recognized more from that than anything else that I've ever done.
Because with the Addams Family, you do not look like yourself.
No.
You are now, you have facial hair, you have hair, yeah. You have eyebrows.
Hair.
You have hair, everyone.
Ruffle.
But you were the full Fester there. You were like the full shaven.
Oh, yeah.
All
shave my head
ashen.
Every day.
have a light bulb in your face.
Exactly. When I had my head shaved, of course, and the show was on the air all the time, I would get recognized all the time. So it was really cool. But mostly it was my voice.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I would go and be in a grocery store line and the girl would be looking at me like, what? And finally she said, are you an actor? And it was like, I recognized your voice. I thought for sure that you were Uncle Fester. And I was like, yeah. The best one though, I was in at Costco and I was going down the aisle and there was a mom and a kid and somehow we were doing, so you're crossing each other in almost every aisle. And the kid would look at me and I'd make this kind of Fester face at him like, and he'd be like, oh, I knew it. And he'd say to his mom, mom, that guy, that Uncle Fester. And then she'd look over and I'd be all serious face, looking at some peas or something. And she goes, don't, it's not. And we did it like 4 or 5 times to that kid. I would just look at him like, yeah. Like this big thing. So he's just going nuts because it's just, he didn't believe it was real.
That's great. Well, I like in your story that you're at Costco, but you're holding like a hand-sized can of peas. Because it's Costco, really, you'd be holding like a barrel of peas, you know, barely supporting it in your lap, bent over.
I'm not that good at miming things. I had to be this. I really can't do that well.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of episodes ago, David and I got into a conversation about the Addams Family, and David took me off topic with some of his nonsense.
Oh, okay.
And I've been known to do that.
I wanted to get a...
Can I just say one thing before we talk about that?
Oh, sweet Lord Almighty.
It's all right. Go ahead.
I want to get a Fester's opinion about this.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm watching an old Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And it's Scooby-Doo Mysteries, and they have the Addams Family.
Yes.
Okay. And they're going after a guy who's a monster. Well, they don't know it's a guy. It's a monster.
Yeah.
And the guy at the end, like, gets his head taken off, and it's like, oh, it's old man Wilkins or whatever it is. And they're like, basically, yeah, monsters, I guess monsters aren't real. I'm like, the Addams Family are fucking monsters.
Yeah.
You have, like, the Frankenstein as a butler and shit. Like, is there nothing? Monsters exist. You are monsters. Why is a monster chasing a monster? That to me made absolutely no sense.
No,
your thoughts.
I would totally agree.
Let's hear what you have to say about this metaphysical problem.
I would totally agree. Wasn't the monster in that one, or the non-monster in that one? That was the butler. Was it something we'd hired or something? Wasn't
there
a maid?
That could very well be.
It was a couple,
yeah,
if I remember that.
I like
that
you say caretakers? I like to say we. That's interesting.
Oh, that. What a Freudian slip that is.
I'm sorry, for a second. Was I just talking to Fester for a few minutes?
Someone's a method actor.
Let's say Fester 5 times and see
what happens. Fester.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Oh, a cut just got infected on my hand.
Wednesday, Pugsley, we're in trouble.
Yay! Hey!
I love that. I love that Scooby-Doo, the Scooby-Doo mystery movies.
Really?
Yeah, I totally.
Me too.
There's a part of them that is just terrible.
Yes.
But there's
something about them,
and there's a few. I don't know if you guys have already talked about them. I don't want to.
No. I didn't because this guy started talking about Bruce frickin' Lee and just.
Yeah, it was all over it, man.
But yeah, Addams Family ones, Batman and Robin. Awesome. Yeah. A few things. But then...
Beverly Sills. I was trying to say the opera singer, really? Beverly Sills.
I don't think so.
I was Sandy Duncan.
Yeah. Tim Conway, for sure. Don Knotts, for sure.
Three Stooges.
Paul Lynn, I believe.
Possibly. Dick Van Dyke.
Yes.
Terrible one, but
I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
Did he have his British accent with him?
No, thank God. Did he have it on Mary Poppins? Really? I'm trying to... There was Sonny and Cher.
I don't remember that, but that does
Mama
make sense.
Cass?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, no, there was, like I said, there were some really awesome ones that made sense. But to me, like Mama Cass or Sandy Duncan are kind of going, Jerry Reed?
Casey Kasem, I believe, once.
I think, yeah, because
he's the damn voice.
Yeah.
So how long were these? How long were they when they were
on? An hour. Were they full hour?
They were a full hour.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
They were on, can I plug this? Teletoon Retro?
Oh, they are?
On Saturday mornings. I don't know if they're still running.
I think
but
it's
I
only a plug if you own Teletoon.
Oh, great. Okay.
Otherwise, you're just mentioning a thing that exists.
Yeah, okay. Then that's all right.
Wait a second. Can I plug Star Wars, Dave?
I think you're making the show a little too commercial, Ian.
But yeah, I don't know if it's still running, but Prometheus, it was running. And I PVR'd like a, what do you call it, when they taped the whole series or whatever.
Yep.
You do a series recording?
I did that, and I had about 15 of them. And that was when I put the stop to that. And then I started watching a few of them. And like I say, some of them were just, this is just ridiculous.
Now I had
Jonathan Winters.
I had an idea for an episode of the Scooby-Doo Mysteries, which you could never do, but boy, howdy, I would love it if you could. Which is like, there's an episode, this is the episode I would pitch.
Okay.
You have all the guest stars.
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo and the gang have gone missing.
Okay.
They have to find them. And it's all the guest stars. So it's Batman and Robin teaming up with the Addams Family and Sonny and Cher and Tim Conway and I believe Beverly Sills. And all of them together.
That
have
seems
to
so
do this.
Improbable. Sure, it wasn't Kitty Carlisle.
I'm turning over all the mystery cards.
They're in the old Maine. Old Maine, old Pine.
Old Maine, old Maine. Well, it does. The nice
Welcome
thing,
to Freudian Dragon.
It does tell you that they all live in the same universe.
Yeah.
So Batman lives in the same universe as the Addams Family.
Yes, they do. There is only one universe.
Yeah, and Tim Conway lives in it with Sonny and Cher. I think that's true.
I believe that Sonny
and
CBS. Cher.
I think that universe is CBS.
Wait a minute. That's the connection. It was on CBS. I wonder if that's why. I wonder if you went back and looked at who had shows or who had whatever.
Yeah.
That there's some stupid connection that way.
It would be so nice if, like, say, ABC owned Scooby-Doo. Boy, it sounds like, I really feel like Scooby-Doo was ABC now that I'm thinking about it. But if Scooby-Doo was owned by ABC and you could do the mystery movie, so you have Columbo.
Yeah.
You got McMillan and wife.
That would be awesome.
Those were
Columbo
NBC.
And,
were they there, NBC?
Those were NBC,
that's
yeah.
NBC.
Oh.
Yeah, those were
even
Universal.
Better.
Yeah.
That would be better. Who was Rockford Files?
What NBC.
Was, yeah, Rockford Files and Scooby-Doo would be fantastic.
I would like that.
I would enjoy that.
Somebody get on the phone. I want this to happen now.
Well, Jim Garner's still alive.
He's
Let's
still around. He can do the voice.
He
and he'd probably be much happier sitting here like this talking into a microphone than having to run around and drive a car.
Yeah, well, you look at the end of the series, right, when the show went into the 80s, he's just noticeably like limping so badly because he had a bad knee, and he just exacerbated it during the series because he insisted on doing a lot of his own stunts, and all he kept doing was hurting his knee that was already injured. So. Yeah,
I watched an episode the other day because it was called The Funny Box, I think it was called, and the story behind it was that it was a comedian who was stealing someone else's jokes.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and he
was
bugging a room for the guy's jokes.
Yeah.
And then he would do the jokes on TV and like, oh, he did it on live TV. I'd kill the son of a bitch.
Yeah.
But then someone's after him because the mob is after him because he heard something apparently that he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Oh, as well as the jokes.
Right, and you're like, well, that's a fair plot. Here we go. But what they had in it, which was so surprising for the 70s, was what he heard was a mob guy's son, who's also in the mob, was gay.
Yeah.
And so it was like, if this word gets out that he's gay, well, that's just going to be a shame on the family.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you think like, oh, they're going to play this real camp. But they actually
It's a really dark ending.
It's a good episode. And I'm going to be a little spoily. But like the mob boss and his son is there, and the mob boss is, how can you know, we're not, you're never going to mention this. You're never going to tell me about this. I don't want to know about it. It's like, Pop, come on. I never dated a girl. I tried to talk to you about this. You never talked to me about this. Remember, Dad, when we sat down when I was a teenager? Ah, everyone goes through that. It's like, what you do is shameful. And what do we do, Dad? What do we do?
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, and you got to deal with it. And it was like this, whoa, this would be completely, you know, in place today. It was like really good. Mm-hmm. And then, some tragedy happens at the end, as it
Very
would.
Gloomy.
But it was like, it was neat seeing the mob boss dad get told off. And they're like, we're gangsters.
Yeah.
You're judging that I'm gay.
Yeah.
Was he Robert Loggia?
No, he was not.
Oh, would that have been good? Was that a bit good? Was that a good guess?
No,
it was a Loggia type. It wasn't too far from Loggia.
He was in a few different
and
episodes.
And the comedian,
actor.
The comedian that was the thief one.
Kenny.
Who are you going to guess?
Oh no, his name was Kenny something on the show.
Oh, the comedian was the guy who used to be
Chuck
in the,
McCann.
Oh, I'm going to date myself like nobody's business right now. Yeah. He was in an old series of ads where a guy would open the medicine
Chuck
cabinet.
Chuck McCann.
That's right. Yeah. Hi guy. Yeah.
Hi guy.
Yes.
Yeah, that's Chuck McCann.
I was going to have two guesses, Jack Carter or Chuck McCann.
Oh, yeah, Jack Carter is always a good guess.
Yeah, that would have been my guess.
Jack Carter is, he is in an episode of Rocket Files, Jack Carter.
I worked with Chuck McCann once on a show.
Oh,
on an episode of Sliders.
Sliders. And that was a show about a burger emporium that invented a tinier burger.
That's right. You could get three of them.
Right. You went to another universe where burgers were smaller and served in groups of three.
And they made $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah. No, he was
Sliders.
I was playing. Yeah. Every time I say the name, I have to
You've
do
got
it
to
like
whisper
they did it.
Sliders.
They in one of their alternate universes, the guy on the show, the black guy that was the I can't remember, Rembrandt, his name was.
Yeah.
He was like Elvis on this other universe.
Right.
So when they went there, they were having a Rembrandt impersonation contest. And I was one of the impersonators who was the albino Rembrandt. And I had a big afro and I had to do this big song on stage, which it was really funny because when I got the part, I didn't really think about that I was singing in front of about 200 people. And I had to get up there and do this song about crying and do all this thing. And then I get booed off the stage. And Chuck McCann was like he was sort of
MC?
No, the Elvis's manager.
Colonel Parker.
Colonel Parker, kind of a character. So he was a cowboy hat and a big southern accent and everything. But we were there filming at the CBC somewhere for like a 15-hour day.
Okay.
So I had quite a bit of time to chat with him. And what I knew about him especially that I wanted to talk about was that I knew he'd befriended Stan Laurel.
Okay.
In Stan Laurel's later years. And so we talked a lot about just like, because to me, that part of Hollywood, I mean, it's still there to a degree if you want to know who you want to go visit. I mean, you want to go visit Chuck McCann.
Yeah.
But he looked him up in the phone book and went to visit him and like phoned him up and became friends with him. Mm-hmm. And I'm just fantastic. Like, this is so amazing. And you, every once in a while you hear those stories about people that befriend these
yeah.
sort of almost well, forgotten comedians.
I wouldn't say forgotten, but someone like Peter Bogdanovich who, you know, has this vast treasure trove of old Hollywood because he befriended like Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne and stuff
yeah.
like that. And he was this obviously totally different generation, much closer to like John Wayne's kids' age than
yeah.
maybe to John Wayne. But there's a book by Peter Bogdanovich talking about his relationship with those guys and the Jimmy Stewart stories, which I cannot do justice to because you have to read them and have his voice in your head.
Yeah.
They are so great. His stories about living with Henry Fonda in this house that was just haunted by all these stray cats. And it's just a great story.
Jimmy Stewart and Henry Fonda live
together.
Yeah.
Well, how haunted by cats. Sound? I mean, just, they had so many stray cats around.
Do
them,
either you know. One of those voices.
And then he has this other great story of being with John Wayne at his
house. It's a ghost.
Being at John Wayne's house. And John Wayne's son comes into the living room while they're standing and doing something. And John Wayne doesn't say anything. But he just watches his son like a hawk walk across the room. You know, his son kind of self-consciously picks something up, then leaves again, and John Wayne just follows him the whole way out again. And then he carries on with the conversation. There's just these great little moments in the
My
book.
My boy steals.
You got to keep an eye on
it. It's just this kind of great disapproving dad watching his hippie son walk in.
Yeah.
You know, because this would have been late 60s, early 70s. So.
Yeah. But it was really cool. It was cool. He was a really nice guy, and, you know, he talked about those few things.
Can I just say one more thing about that episode, The yeah. Rockford Files, written by David Chase?
Sopranos. I was going to say, maybe it was written by somebody really good because it yeah. sounded like a good, but there you go. David
yeah,
Chase.
It was like Chase a really a, good scene. And again, going like, hey, 70s, way to go.
There was a lot of good writers on that show and people that you just, I don't know, like you don't
it
really
holds
follow.
Up. That show really holds up.
It really holds up. But they always gave the writers, always got a good credit on that show as well. It wasn't just the director that got a good, and producers who got a good, you really knew who wrote each episode. Like there's this lady named Juanita Bartlett who worked for Garner in his production company, Cherokee Productions, which co-produced Rockford Files. And I think she was just like an assistant there. I don't know if she was like a writer, but she started writing for the show. And she produced some of the best episodes. I don't know if you remember it's a two-part one, where Jimmy has to help Dennis Dugan's character, Richie Brockelman, to con this guy. Do you remember that one? And it's like this.
I did a movie with Dennis Dugan.
Me okay, too.
Yeah. Me too. We all did movies with Dennis Dugan.
But do you remember that one?
We're name dropping. Hey, Michael.
Yeah.
Dennis Dugan?
Yeah. Happy Gilmore?
Yeah, Happy Gilmore.
And
were you in Happy
Saving
Gilmore?
Solmer. Yeah, I was.
I was in Happy Gilmore too.
Me too, yeah.
Happy Gilmore Brothers.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, Dave, were you in
that,
Happy
Dave?
Gilmore?
Were you
in Happy
so.
Gilmore?
No.
We're both in Happy Gilmore, Dave.
I'm very happy for you.
Gilmore.
I'm very happy for you, Gilmore.
Yeah,
we're the Gilmore Boys.
It's the sequel.
But do you don't remember that one? You know what? The one with the – there's like King – has this kind
was
of
there
King
only
Tut
one
–
there's more than one Richie Brockelman.
Oh, the King Tut episode? One?
There's a King Tut one where they have the long con and they show how the con works. They have auditions for people to play the roles.
Oh, yeah.
It's a brilliant one and she wrote it, but I really don't think she came out of like a writing background, but she wrote some of the very best episodes.
The reason I brought up Dugan, aside from trying to impress Michael, was when I went into the audition for Happy Gilmore, Adam Sandler was there, which was a surprise.
Oh, yeah.
But I was still like more thrilled to see Dennis Dugan. I was like, it's Dennis Dugan from the crew. And that's how I auditioned. I went, well, I'll read these lines.
Did you ask him about Richard Brockman's Private Eye?
No, because he was just right in and right out. Like, it was like audition and get out. And then Will Sasso went in and got my part. But then I got another part. He just threw a part at me and I got it. So that was good.
That's nice.
That's, you know what? Will that's funny. Sasso. That's pretty much. I'm basically a glorified extra in Happy Gilmore. I'm on the box. If you ever pick up the box cover and there's like, it says like special edition.
Yeah.
I'm like got my shirt off and there's letters written on our chest. There's like five of us that said happy rules.
Yeah.
On it.
What
that's
letter
what
were
ended
you
up being H and then R.
Holy cow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's really awesome. But anyway, but no, I couldn't help it that of just like Dennis Dugan and having to go, Like, you know, you'd be Richie Brockle, the private eye. And I, you know what? I really believe some of those people appreciate that you remember something more obscure.
Yeah.
Rather than bringing up, I mean, I don't know what else you'd bring up with him necessarily, but I mean.
Well, he did go to the moon in the Walt Disney movie.
Unidentified Flying Oddball?
I think that's what it was called, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Attempt to Go to the Moon or something.
Is he the cat from outer space?
No, that's.
That was played by a cat.
That's a Dean Jones. That's a Dean Jones movie.
Yeah, that was a cat.
Yeah.
Or is that that darn cat that I'm thinking of?
No, that darn cat, no.
Now, were any of these cats in that house that you were talking about earlier that was haunted by the cats?
They were all Hollywood cats.
I didn't mean it was haunted like they were ghosts.
There was the one from Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yes.
That lived in the house with Jimmy Stewart and Henry.
There was Pussy Galore.
Yes, she lived there.
She lived there too.
Kitty Carlisle.
They were okay with that. They were okay with those living there.
Cat Stevens.
Cat Stevens was there too.
For a while. And then.
And he always sang Kathmandu.
That's right. And Hairball Johnson, the old jazz singer.
We all remember him.
It was the clearing of the throat and constantly then, that just was his downfall.
That's right. And into his saxophone.
And the golfer Fuzzy Zellers. That's my only contribution I could tell.
I think we should just end the episode now.
How about the pitcher? Catfish Hunter.
Okay.
They were all
catfish
hunters.
Can I stop, please?
Yeah. Okay. We've got all the good candy out of the Halloween bag, and now we're looking at that weird cat.
The black and orange.
Yeah, we're opening up. It's got like a lot of the wrapper still stuck
the
to it.
The molasses candy.
Yeah, we're going to have to really...
We're down to the molasses
candy?
We're going
to have to suck the molasses off her wax paper.
That candy is...
Do you know who gave that candy?
Cheap people?
No. You know who? Immigrants.
No, that's not
they
nice.
They didn't know any better. They just went, kids like candy.
Kids like candy.
And
they
you
like
know the
molasses.
The sweetest thing in the country they come from? Molasses.
That's right.
The kids bob for molasses. They don't even need that. They're afford an apple.
How much molasses was there?
Stick your face in the molasses and eat it for a week.
Yeah. They would, like, one kid would stick their head and the other one just lick their head.
That makes me think of the Buster Keaton.
But the crows!
I don't think it's a Buster Keaton film,
that Eastern European country they were from.
There's that Fatty Arbuckle silent film, and there's a scene in a general store, and molasses gets spilled, and is that like a big giant jug of molasses? What did they use molasses for? Like, what was it used in? Was it
cooking?
Cooking what?
Like if you were like baking.
Blackstrap molasses.
Well,
that's
no,
what you cooked.
Like you'd cook like a cookie. You'd have like molasses in a cookie for sure.
Really?
Yeah. You still do. Christmas cookies, you make them with molasses? Sure.
You can still get molasses?
Oh, yeah.
I've got molasses.
The general store?
What the hell?
Sorry, you have to go to the general store. It looks like a little milk carton.
Wait, guys, who lives in the city? Me. Where do you guys both live?
We live in the country.
The country.
Yeah, you don't have
molasses. We're country mice.
Wait, it's too hard.
You don't have molasses in the damn country?
It's too expensive to bring molasses out to the country. That's
I never
like
it. All right, because it's got to go uphill.
That stuff you find at like Capers and Whole Foods
and
stuff
right.
like that.
When
that's
out
all
there,
like
you know what? Dave and I meet around the old pickle barrel, and that's where we're happy.
That's
we're
where we're happy.
At that.
Pickle. That's all we get out there. Pickles.
Yeah, let's get some pickles and make up some new racial slurs. I call you a flubberbush.
Well, you're the one saying immigrants are eating a horrible candy.
Oh, he didn't say it in a negative tone, though. It was just immigrants.
You know, happy immigrants.
Happy immigrants.
Happy immigrants to you as well.
The happy immigrants song.
I want to take you to any corner store. You will find some molasses.
And immigrants.
Okay. Wow.
Molasses.
Well, we don't see it where we live.
Okay.
Fair I think enough. You do.
I'm sorry, we don't have the hoity-toity...
Molasses hoity-toity.
You know, genteel grocery stores like you have downtown where you can buy,
Nothing fancier than molasses.
You can buy tarragon vinegar and, you know, all these kind of special balsamic things and
completely in the
this
same.
And that.
You find the molasses next to the tarragon vinegar.
I'm
That's
saying it's a specialty
it.
Thing now. It's not common.
Out of touch.
You know, I have a hard time finding clam nectar out my way.
On a hot summer day.
Wait, I'll say.
Is that slang for something?
I'm not saying.
Let's not. Let I know just, we got the explicit warning, but there's no need to use a phrase like clam nectar in front of our guest, Michael.
It was a joke. Right. It was a joke for Lisa.
All right.
Okay. All right. Just don't let your wife hear it.
She's
I will admit I still giggle when I see a sign on a restaurant that says fish tacos. How immature are you?
About a 6.
Yeah. Because I will. I also do it when I hear the word duty on the radio.
Like Call of Duty?
No. Usually when they say that they raise the duties on going across the border and bringing stuff back. And I literally get all sort of Homer Simpson-y and kind of duty.
Well, yeah. And especially if you're going through the duty free. It's like, I'm sorry. You clearly have to poop. You cannot go through the duty free,
sir. You are alive.
Yeah, but, I'm sorry, sir.
Yeah, I don't. I'm alone in the car, and I will giggle at that. That's what I do.
I'm sorry. I want to take back just for a second to '70s mystery shows.
Yes.
Columbo.
Yeah.
Were the episodes too long?
Oh, yeah.
I think they lengthened them, right?
I know. The original ones were an hour, weren't they? I got season one, and then I recently picked up like one of those mystery movie later 90s packages. Yeah. And they were all feature length. Because that's the way the NBC mystery movie was.
Was it so they're 90 minutes.
When you watch a Columbo, you watch it, like you go like, oh, Columbo, let's watch a Columbo. This is going to be great. Holy shit, it goes on for a long time. Like when you're in about minute 70, you're just like, just fucking.
No more questions.
Is it because you know who it is? I think I think what made them different is also was their downfall.
Right.
I mean, I shouldn't say downfall. It only lasted 30 years that people wanted to watch it. But I mean, I think Peter Falk was fantastic. And I mean, it's like one of the greatest characters ever. But I think their thing of making you know who the killer is right away and then having him find it out, I think that they probably should have ditched that. And I think that wouldn't suffer from that because I agree with you.
But the problem with that is then you run into Law and Order problem. Where all of a sudden you see, like, you're looking through the Law and Order names off the top.
The credits,
and it's like, and then you see Jack Carter. It's like, it's Jack Carter.
Yeah.
Like, it's the name you recognize. That's the murderer.
Yeah.
So if you have an episode of Columbo, and it's like with William Shatner and Philip fake name and whatever. And it's just like, it's William Shatner. William Shatner did the killing because we want to see William Shatner freak out at the end.
Yeah.
And I think William Shatner killed like three different times in three different Columbo episodes.
But I think the point of the show wasn't just the mystery. It was a chance for actors to ham it up, like to have that guilty conscience, to try to be manipulating. And, you know, that the whole give and take was the point of the show. Well,
it was the snobs versus the slob as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's like this kind of that kind of relationship. And sometimes the murderer could have, they didn't want to get caught, but they were remorseful.
Yeah.
But they still didn't want to get caught.
Or then they got smug and braggy.
That's
kind of like, haha, I fooled you, you little man who shouldn't be in my mansion in that coat. Why didn't you take off your shoes? Don't put your cigarette butt there. That's a blah, 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 blah.
That's right.
And there were weird episodes. There was one with Patrick McGowan, and that one made no sense to me at any time. The whole tone of it seemed really odd. He played like a general. Do you remember that one?
No.
And the whole show just seemed very strange. Like it was almost like you're watching like an episode of The Prisoner, except Columbo was in it. That's what it felt like. They're like, we should do a tribute to The Prisoner. But you know what's weird is there was one episode. I don't know.
Just one more question. What the fuck is going on?
There was a Columbo episode. It takes place at Universal Studios, which is where it was filmed. So it was kind of the bottle episode. And but they keep talking about this whiz kid at the studio, and his name was Spielberg, which I thought was kind of funny. Yeah, yeah. And
it's that's cool.
And they finally see me as just a little kid. So I think they're having a lot of fun with it. So
yeah, because that was one of his first jobs.
Yeah.
It wasn't called Diagnosis Murder, but it had a title like that.
Yeah.
Episode. Prescription Murder?
Maybe. I don't know. But he was like well-known
at
the studio.
Well, after you get your Diagnosis Murder, then you have to get your prescription murder filled out.
Yeah, of course you do.
But then you got to watch out for murder side effects.
Oh, yeah.
Which are you can't take murder with grapefruit juice.
But don't forget, before everything else, you have Examination Murder.
Oh, no one's got that title yet.
That can be painful.
And Waiting Room Murder. That's murder.
What was your favorite of those mystery movies, though, over the years?
I would have to say Columbo would still be my favorite, even though you guys are putting it down like a couple of jerks.
Columbo versus Roddy McDowall is always a good fight for me.
Oh, yeah. Roddy McDowall, awesome.
He's great. Or the one with John Cassavetes, that's a really good one.
But I think my personal favorite, I think, is still Snoop Sisters.
I don't remember that one.
What is Snoop Sisters?
You know, is that a later one?
Oh, man. Snoop Sisters was Helen Hayes and Mildred Natwick.
Okay.
Helen Hayes was a mystery writer like an Agatha Christie. Yeah. I think they both wrote books together.
Okay.
And they lived in this big old mansion kind of thing. And Bert Convy.
So the same mansion she lived in the Herbie movie?
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay.
And Bert Convy was their nephew because their sisters was their nephew. And he drove them around. I think he was also a cop.
I actually remember this show now.
And what's great about it is they were spooky mysteries. Like they literally... Alice Cooper was in one. And I think Vincent Price was a guest star. There's only about six of them.
Yeah.
I know.
It wasn't like a super popular one.
No, unfortunately, but it was like literally one of my favorite. Like I've watched those episodes like I don't know how many times. Anytime they appeared on TV, I was there. Because remember, they would rerun them when CTV or whatever channel would show movies in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a kid faking sickness because I'd have the TV guide and I'd go... There's a Snoop Sitch, or there's some really obscure. Eva Roy Slade is on Friday. So let's see, about Wednesday night, I got to start getting that tickle in my throat because I want to be home Friday to watch Evil Roy Slade.
If I got to fake some being sick, what I got to do is take some beef stew, mash it up.
Yeah.
Like you get your canned beef stew from the corner store, yeah. Mash it up, throw that in the toilet, and then just like fake throwing up. And then like, they're not going to examine it.
Nope.
That clearly looks like vomit. We're done.
You got the day off.
Like, when did you have beef stew? I cook every one of your meals. We had spaghetti last night.
I never skipped school. But
he puts it quietly.
Let's go back. I did it once.
Hear me, kids.
I won't deny it. I did it once in grade 12, and it was so boring that I just went. Couldn't.
That is the saddest.
It was
thing
dull.
I've ever heard. I skipped so much school.
I need
that
routine.
I basically dropped out of high school, but I, you know, I just was. I was away more than I was there.
Yeah. I just want to go back because
school's for losers.
There was a time on on A&E when it was the Arts and Entertainment Channel that played mystery shows.
Oh, yeah.
When it had both arts and entertainment.
Yes, yeah, rather than now where it's just intervention.
And there was that brief time that was all Nazis.
Yeah.
The Hitler sisters.
They would play all those shows, the like Columbo, McMillan Away.
McLeod.
Banachek, which I didn't remember.
Oh, I've got all of Banachek.
That was pretty good with George Peppard as a sort of very snobby character. I quite
enjoyed
that.
Insurance investigator.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
Freelance but insurance investigator.
I have to say, my freelance.
He annoyed the real insurance people because they were like, oh, and he'd just sit there with his little cigarette and just being like, no, I think I've got it all figured out. And they had Banachek.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Every one of those
Polish
characters.
Proverb.
The thing I liked the most about that show, though, was the opening with the guy with the flashlight walking across the field to that weird kind of music. That
yeah.
Was, yeah, it had the
Freaked me out a little bit as a kid.
I like that.
A little
that.
Scary.
Yeah, I got red. I was excited.
Because you know he's going to find a body at some damn point.
Yeah.
Well.
You're not out there with a flashlight because you like being out there with a flashlight. Someone's missing.
That's right.
It's possible. Someone's
McMillan or wife. It could be either one of them.
Did wife help? Like as much as I remember, it was like McMillan and we don't really need anyone else.
She was kind of the kooky character, wasn't she?
Yeah,
sort of
she
the comedy.
Got into a lot of trouble.
She was kind of the comedy.
But then also, didn't you also have like Nancy Walker? Wasn't she also then the comic relief?
Yes.
How much damn comic relief?
Well, no,
now
she,
we're getting into Lethal Weapon 4 territory.
No, she wasn't
where it's like, how much comedy relief do you need?
I wouldn't say I won't call her comedy relief. She was more like the us. She was the us character in the show, right? So she was.
Oh, Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we love Rock Hudson. That was his name, right? Rock Hudson?
Yeah.
And so you guys were looking at me like, are you sure his name is Rock Hudson?
Well, I just thought you were pulling us all into the we there. I was like, that was more what I was thinking.
Yeah, I don't know if I really
loved
Rock
him.
Well,
I was fond of him. I don't
listen,
really know.
We all think Rock Hudson is one of the handsomest men alive and was our earliest sexual fantasy. We all feel that way. But anyway, the important thing about her character was it brought you down.
Was I going too far?
Flashlight, I'd get a boner.
Was I saying that going too far?
It let you watch the show.
There was something in the voice.
We all had weird feelings for Rock Hudson when we were younger, and she was, you know, she was kind of our in. We're all like, oh, I wish I could be her.
I was more Nancy Walker for me.
That's right. Because that's why Dave's nickname when he was a little kid was And Wife.
That's why they called him that.
That's right.
That's right.
That's why I had the permanent mark of a fist in my face. When I was And Wife.
If only those kids
fist.
Had seen that Rockford Files episode.
They would have understood.
They would have gone, gangsters are worse. Do you know what's worse than homosexuality? Murderers.
Let's go kick some shit out of gangsters, guys.
Yeah, a little gangster bashing.
What are you, a gangster?
Guys, I'm just trying to do a little extortion. Come on, get him, he's gangster. Beep, beep, beep. Hey, quit it, guys. Give me some of your money for protection. No, we're not. We're going to beat you up instead. No, it doesn't work.
Yeah, this is our thing, Smash.
That's right. The littlest mobster.
Yeah, into
you know who would have been a good Columbo, if Columbo couldn't be Columbo? Would be, I'm going to say, oh, gosh darn it. Who's the guy from Caddyshack?
Chevy Chase?
No.
Ted Baxter?
No,
Ted Knight?
No.
Ted Knight.
Main guy.
Oh, Rodney Dangerfield.
Yes.
You think he would have been a good Columbo?
Just because he's one of those guys that insults the snobs. Like him coming in and just does a bunch of these. Yeah, and like, hey, what you got? A bunch of that. And at the end, like, you get out of here. You know why? You're the murderer. Like, what? And then explains it.
I don't think he would. Okay, Columbo, let's just say we need Columbo. We can't get rid of Columbo. So we still need Peter Falk as Columbo.
Yeah.
But that would have been great if Rodney Dangerfield did a show like that.
Well, because he'd have to have that same skill because that's what, I mean, you know, Columbo hid his true talent behind being annoying.
Yeah.
So that would be, yeah, I mean, it would be the same kind of thing. It was just like, this guy's getting on my nerves.
I see why this lease is moaning. Hey, what's it doing? And of course, we know that, the original is in the Louvre, which means that this is a folk, this is a, you're the murderer. What? We're all going to get laid. They start playing I'm All Right. All Right. And then they all dance as the police show up.
Hey, who threw this chocolate bar in the pool? No, that would be great. Because that would, yeah. But I don't think he would have done it. Just because I think he didn't consider himself an actor, like
no,
in those movies,
he wouldn't have done it. But if, boy, it would have been great if he would have done it.
Yeah, I'm all over it.
And I've never seen it. Mrs. Columbo, you ever see that?
Yeah,
I've seen a couple episodes.
I was going to say Kate Mulgrew. No, it's not Kate.
Yes,
was it right?
Yeah, Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah, yeah, later on. She's later on.
I would have seen the pilot because I would have just anything would have come on like that. I would have vaguely looked at it, but I don't even know if I made it.
Well, the creators, I know the creators of Columbo did not like Mrs. Columbo, but somehow through a legal thing, it ended up happening. And I'm trying to think if this actually happened on the show or not. It might have just been something that they wanted to do. But like one where someone mentions his wife and to Columbo in like a later thing and goes like, I heard she's solving mysteries. Yeah, that's not her.
Oh, really?
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
Well, because it kind of ruins the character. I mean, like the whole point of his wife is that she's just mentioned. So she's this possibly existing thing.
She's one of a tradition in TV of invisible characters that you never see.
The other one being Harvey.
Yeah.
And
Norm's wife,
Carlton, your doorman.
I Dream of Jeannie.
Right.
I Dream of Jeannie.
You never see her in the show?
I could see her.
Oh, I must have.
Well, you see, the thing, Dave was too busy looking at Larry Hagman.
He just couldn't tear his eyes open.
That was his teenage nickname, was Genie.
Because Genie was your entry point into the show. You wanted to be Genie.
Just shove me in a bottle, Major Healy. Dave had a Major Healy for that guy.
Right. So my wife says,
Larry Hagman gives me a Major Healy.
So my wife says, t-shirt. Did you just say Major Healy? No, no. I said, Lisa. I said, Major Lisa.
Look, anyway, just put on this astronaut outfit. And let's just forget about it.
How about who would have played Columbo's wife though, on the series? Like, what do you think? You had somebody in mind when you think of who his wife should have been or what type of a character?
No, you can never show. You should never show her.
No, I know, but I'm just wondering what you would, what kind, because I imagine a certain type of person would have been married to him.
Yeah, very diminutive type. But like,
no, I don't think diminutive at all. I think big.
Do you think like a big gal?
A big gal, yeah.
Oh,
like
I
a big mom, like a big mother character. Like
I kind of big. Big family. I think I'm a closer to you when I think of someone like a younger version of George Costanza's mother.
Estelle Getty?
No,
that's not. Yeah. Is that who played that?
She was Estelle Costanza.
No, I know who you're talking about.
But you know, someone like that, or I'm, you know, those kind.
You're
of...
You're not thinking like a B. Arthur, are you?
Like no, not like that. But like a happy Italian, you know, mom with, and she had to have kids.
No, see, I think Nagy and big no dinners children and living in
no,
you know,
no,
I don't think they had
no.
big odd couple type apartments in New York.
No, I think his life is happy.
They're not in New York, they're in L.A. But
I think his life is very happy, and so you know his, you know, he only feels pity for these murders, you know. That's one of the interesting things about the show is he never hates them. He's never like, I gotta get that guy, or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. He's very sort of.
There was that one episode where he's talking and like giving a speech, and they're like, "Do you hate these people?" It's like, no, some of them are quite nice.
Yeah,
you know, just like, but they killed somebody, so
exactly,
gotta bring them in.
Yeah.
Have you ever read any books by Donald Westlake?
No,
by any chance?
No.
Unless did he. One of his books, did he finish a Raymond Chandler book that was unfinished?
I think he may have. I was thinking of this series of books he wrote
Poodle
about
Springs.
A character named Dortmunder.
Okay.
The movie The Hot Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
With Robert Redford.
Oh, that's a great
based
movie.
Based on one of the Dortmunder books.
Oh, really?
One of us thinks it's a great movie. One of us has not seen it.
Oh, it's great.
It's a great movie.
But no, I'll just be really quick with that. But no, that's the same kind of thing where if you knew those books or those characters, that's what I imagine Columbo's home life was like. Because it is that kind of New York apartment. Mm-hmm. Dortmunder's wife works at a grocery store.
Mm.
And it's just kind of, they get along, but there's no sparks. There's no kind of witty repartee or anything going on in the house. It's just very happy and very content. And that's kind of where the Columbo thing, I've just always thought it was that kind of thing. Why is thinking in a New York apartment like the Odd Couple lived in?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was L.A.
I always pictured Columbo going home and just getting out of his car and just going, "Hello, darling, I'm back from solving crimes."
He's James Mason.
The James Mason.
Oh, they fell for my ruse again as the rapscallion.
That's right. Come on into my...
Let's go to Banachek's house for dinner.
Come on into my submarine.
I showed that William Shatner what's what
for the third time in this series.
Why do they keep freeing him and that Roddy McDowell?
Because they're so good. Yes, we all remember those.
Oh, Jack Carter killed a man. I've got to go.
You had it made once you figured out who you were in the 60s and early 70s.
Done.
You could figure out who your character was and what kind of guy you were. Man, you just...
Oh, I would say before that. I mean, 30s, 40s, 50s.
Well,
if you were a Franklin Pangborn or a William Demarest, those guys...
Yeah.
Well, now here's a question. That's true. Someone like a Paul Lynn. Okay, you got a Paul Lynn, right?
Yeah.
Now I watched a bit of Bye Bye Birdie, and I was like, oh, I get Paul Lynn. This is completely a Paul Lynn part. But I don't think the part was written for Paul Lynn, but it's like, it's everything that Paul Lynn was then later. Just the whiny guy. I hate you kids. Ah, you. What's going on? I love my wife, do you? I do. I love my wife. I just hate my kids. They're not your kids. What you saying that for? Well, one, they don't look like you, and two, really? Seriously?
You're sure good at singing those songs.
That's right. You seem to have a Major Healy if you're talking about, you know what I'm talking about. But I'm just like, okay, so you do that, and then like, he does that forever. That's his thing. You know, you're on Bewitched. Just do that.
Yeah.
You're on Hollywood Squares. Just do that. You're on the Paul Lynn Show. Once again, married, a little weird.
Yeah.
Just do
well,
that.
You know, when A&E used to run Biography, I don't know if you remember that little show.
Oh, yeah. Biography.
They did do a Paul Lynn
but
one.
But then tragedy struck. He's back again.
And he was frustrated by that, you know, that he was trapped in this character, you know, that...
But he did nothing to try to get out of it.
Except drink, exactly.
I'm back. Yeah, no, for sure. But that was it. Like, that's what I said. I feel it's coming back, though. It's interesting because I think that whole thing of those kind of character actors that are like, just that's who they played. Didn't matter what show it was. Like you said, you went back 30s and 40s. Charles Lane.
What would his character be?
He was on Petticoat Junction and stuff, like the angry banker. Old bald guy glasses, and it didn't matter if he showed up in anything. If he showed up on Bewitched, he was going to be angry and rich, and they always in those kind of things.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I'm seeing people like, do you watch 30 Rock?
Yes.
What's the character's name now? The new intern
Rockefeller.
Oh, yeah, Kristen Schaal, but I don't know what her character is on the show.
What's her name? Is her last?
Is that her name?
Yeah, whatever her first name is. Nice what's her name's her last name? But yeah, see now she's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's one of those people that don't like if you see her show up in guest parts on other shows, she's playing that exact same voice.
The kind of creepy. Yeah. And also on Bob's Burgers, she's kind of got that kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Too, yeah.
So I think there's a few actors out there. Jack McBrayer, I think probably a bit. I mean, there's people that come on and they go, they're developing a full fledged character. It may go off in different directions. Mm-hmm. But you go, this is who I am.
Yeah.
And I'm going, this is fantastic. I like that. I think it's kind of
It's fun. A shorthand,
they're
too.
Saying,
yeah.
When you're saying, this is who I am, a limited actor.
Well,
but better than the generic actor.
I'm teasing.
Are you really?
You guys are. I know you're both trying to develop your characters.
We have
I'm just teasing.
We have a character actor in the room.
We have a character actor in the room?
Yes, you.
You're
brilliant.
Thank you very much. I've been doing this Dave Dedrick thing for quite a while.
I would see him as a character actor, though. And
yeah, I could see
certain,
him. Yeah.
Certain characters, certain...
like what?
I could see you as...
My vanity has peaked. What do you see me as?
I could see you as the dermatologist that then kills somebody.
Okay, now my vanity is less peaked.
Dermatologist, good school teacher.
Okay, I could see a school teacher I could go for.
I see you as the vice principal who's like, we tried everything we could with the kid, and he's buried in the basement because of you.
Wait, what?
He's under
what about
five
me?
Gym mats.
What There's about a real me? Dark, you have a dark streak.
I may be casting Law and Order in my head right now.
Wait, am I the unexpected murderer then? Like, because I don't
no,
think
after
of myself
the first
that
time.
Way.
You got that nice creepy face.
I do.
Yeah, because you look like straight. You look very straight-laced, so it's just like, I wish I knew what happened to your dog. He ate the dog. He clearly ate the dog.
I'm not going to become a character actor.
No, you would be a fine serial killer, though.
Yeah.
Now, to lighten things a little bit.
Thanks.
You mentioned Petticoat Junction.
Yes.
When I was a kid watching Petticoat Junction, something happened on the show that made me freaked out.
Can I just ask you a question?
Yes.
What's Petticoat Junction?
Breasts?
No, that was lovely. I was all for that.
Oh, you're all for that. Okay.
I used to watch a lot of British TV shows, so I'd watch a little Man About the House, and it's just like, if you want Three's Company, but like, let's just go right to the boobs.
That's not cut
any. Let's not have any of this beebity bobbity boo.
We were lucky
to the beebity bobbity boobs.
Yeah, we had KVOS, so we were lucky that way.
Thank God for KVOS.
Yes.
But on Petticoat Junction, they all of a sudden did a crossover with Green Acres.
Yeah.
And they also crossed over with Beverly Hillbillies. Mm-hmm. And it was like, all these sitcoms exist in the same universe. And as a kid, mind blown.
Well, Petticoat Junction was a spinoff from Green Acres, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Or was it just introduced via Green Acres in some way?
Yeah, I don't remember if it was a direct spinoff. But they did cross because Sam Drucker's store.
Yeah,
with the pickle barrel and the molasses was just not far,
which was loosely based on YouTube,
which is in Hooterville in the train. The cannonball ran through.
By the way, can
Hooterville
I just say,
on the way to Bug Tussle?
Yeah. Good stuff. Thanks. Hooterville, Hooters did not mean boobs back then, right?
I don't think so. No.
All right, but please continue with your.
When you look at the opening credits of Petticoat Junction, they should have had Hooterville written on that.
Yeah.
Oh, Bobby, but it didn't. Sue.
That would have
Bobby
been
too
close to the reality. No, Hooterville would have been like a town where only owls, you know, like it was this sort of this place where nothing
was
happening.
That was why it was famous for all the owls and no one could sleep at night.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Always hooting. Hooterville.
Right. And so the Beverly Hillbillies existed in, of course, Beverly Hills, California.
Yes, they
Where
did.
Was Hooterville? Was that in California?
No, it was not.
No, that was, I'm guessing, like the Ozarks.
Well, that's what I'm
thinking.
It's
a rural place.
Like, now, how far away is that from, like, California? Like,
you got to travel.
Yeah, it was quite a ways because, I mean, it was a big deal if Cousin Pearl came. Or Cousin Roy, or
how about Cousin Ruby?
Oh, bless your heart for knowing all these things.
is why I think the spinoff thing, though, because Cousin Pearl was, of course, played by Bea Benaderet, who played there was a star of Petticoat Junction.
I heard that the dog was actually the dog from Benji. It was the same dog. Is that correct?
Trained by Frank Inn.
There we are.
That's too much knowledge. This is what I know. There's a show called Petticoat Junction. There's some good-looking girls, and they're standing in a rain barrel.
Yeah.
That's what I remember.
Yeah, and then you go, like, done.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, if only there was some way to pause live TV.
That's the end of my memory.
Yeah. I got to meet one of them once, and I was really thrilled, because it was the cute one that I really liked.
Oh, Jesus, I did, too.
Did you?
Yes.
Which one?
I don't know, but she was blonde.
Oh, you got the blonde.
And it was on Acting Crazy. Celebrities were, because this is like a charades game, and I was a contestant, but I also loosely worked on the show before. And it was like one of the gals from Petticoat Junction and Mickey DeLenz from the Monkees.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
And just the week before, Jack Carter was there. And then Jack Carter got paid and went, I'm not getting paid in fucking Canadian, am I? Yeah, you are. Fuck you! And was really upset.
And that was it.
He was upset in the limo on the ride home when he found that out.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's cool.
He wrote a letter. He wrote an angry letter to Lenny Bruce about it. It's a little in-joke there.
Well, I want to tell... Okay, you seem to be very TV savvy.
Can I just interrupt one real quick thing just to
say
this?
No, we do not interrupt each
other. I got to say this just because you're about to compliment me, and I have to say this. Because I was on a trip once with some people, and the whole trip was much like this conversation. And this girl said to me, she said, you really seem to know a lot about movies and TV and music and stuff. And I went, well, yeah, I guess I kind of do. Doesn't it ever bother you that it's all just so trivial?
And then you open the car door, pushed her out.
Yeah, no, that was the beginning of a huge fight where she's like, just take me to the Greyhound. I'm going, I'll pay for your fucking ticket home. Yeah, it ended like that. Everybody going, hey, calm down, you guys. I'm like, no, I was really, really insane.
No, you're right. Seize the day. Anyway, here's the Greyhound. Enjoy.
But yeah, anyway, sorry to interrupt you.
You can get beef jerky at most of the stands.
How much I know about TV.
Okay, well, so what I wanted to ask you was, and I'm not looking at my phone.
Yeah, I put it away.
No,
cheater.
I'm looking at my phone just for time.
Oh, okay.
He's going to quiz me. He's got Wikipedia up.
Yeah, this gentleman is a character actor. He's got auditions to get
to. That's true.
Okay, well, I'm good. All right. We can go along.
Okay, sounds good. Okay. Spinoffs.
Yes.
We did an episode where we talked about all the spinoffs from Happy Days.
Yes, we did.
All right, I'm going to quiz you right now.
I was able to name one.
Name all the spinoffs from All in the Family. Go.
Jefferson's.
Yes.
Archie Bunker's Place.
Correct.
Maude.
I would like that.
Maude.
Okay. I'm going to give you a hint. A spinoff of
Jefferson's. Do we say Jefferson's?
Yeah.
Oh, spinoff of Good Times.
All right, very good.
Are you going to count it if it comes off of another show?
Sure, because it all comes from the poisonous tree.
Would you count, what was that? I can't know, 304 Hauser?
Yes, I would count that, yes, because that definitely was a spinoff.
You're looking at me like there's more, but
I think that might be the end.
Okay.
I think we might have a winner.
So what about room 221?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
222.
222. I'm sorry, there was one you missed.
This is the earlier one.
You missed Gloria.
Oh, I did,
Gloria.
Too.
Oh,
with Burgess Meredith.
Gloria. That's right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The one where all of a sudden Rob Reiner's character became a son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Where they just decided, he cheated with his student, and he's abandoned his child, and he was a sack of crap the whole time. The end. How's that work out for you?
Don't you always like when they're mad at a character or mad at an actor, and they just take it out on the character?
Yeah, how about that? Well, they had to get her to be a single mom.
Yeah.
And so it was like,
He could have died.
Yeah, that's your
That's
standard.
A nicer way.
That's your standard.
That's a way of letting the actor
dies off.
Off
camera.
Yeah.
Have your special episode.
Oh, you know what's...
Edith is dead. You know, Archie's no longer a racist.
Rob Reiner is really good on an episode of The Rockford Files. He plays this kind of washed-up quarterback.
Really?
Good. Yeah.
Washed-up quarterback?
Yeah, he's really good on it, yeah. This really unreliable jerk. Yeah,
did
really
he
good.
Play a biker on Partridge Family that was in love with Laurie?
Yes, he did.
It was him. Snake or something?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wow, sorry.
And also...
sorry. So don't be sorry to be like we are. No.
Mark Hamill was also the boyfriend of Laurie on Partridge Family.
Oh, wow. I don't remember that one.
Yes.
Well, I thought he was Rob Reiner's boyfriend on Partridge Family.
What was a spinoff of the Partridge Family?
Oh, yes. Darn it.
Oh. Danny Bonaduce show.
No.
Where he takes steroids and
I know what you're talking about, but I can't name it. Go.
I want to say.
Okay, I know.
Yeah.
The Cow Sills.
No.
Okay.
No, but that's very good.
The Cowlicks.
It was Bobby Sherman.
Yeah.
And was it Getting Together?
That sounds about right.
Was,
yeah.
Susan Day was on it?
No. It was he. I think Bobby Sherman was on the show. Like, you know, they did a spinoff like they did with.
Okay.
They tried to do one on Brady Bunch with
really?
Ken Berry.
With another blended family.
Yeah. And then it was like they appeared in one episode, but it came very much like it was an obvious pilot.
Spinoffs of the Brady Bunch, go.
Brady Bunch Kids?
Yes.
The Brady Bunch cartoon show?
That was the same thing. It's the same thing twice.
The musical series, Brady Bunch.
Yeah, it's the same. There was
the Brady Hour or something.
Yeah, that's right. The Brady Brady Variety Hour.
Yeah. Brady Brides.
Brady Brides.
Christmas with the Bradys?
Very, very, very Brady Christmas.
There was the Very Brady Christmas.
Yeah.
What was the drama called?
Oh, the Bradys?
That is correct.
Wow.
The Bradys? You just guessed.
No, I was pretty sure. I just had to think because I remember those kind of things, watching enough of it just to go, oh, this is terrible. Because I think Bobby was in a wheelchair because he was a race car driver.
That's right. And he became, he became wheelchair bound in the first episode because that's what you want.
Yeah. If you're going to say, no, we want to make sure we want to take ourselves as far away from the sitcom as possible.
Yeah. You don't have a lot of that spinoff fever like they had back then. Basically, it was like they'd hit like a little thing of gold and it would just be like, oh, it's got to go forever.
Do the Happy Days ones for us.
The Happy Days ones?
We did those ones.
You did this. Sorry.
I'll go with you on Happy Days. You got your Laverne and Shirley. You got your Mork and Mindy. You got your Joni Loves Chachi. You've got your... Damn, I always forget the
Gideon.
One with Random, the Angel.
Oh, Random.
You got... Well, Blansky's Beauties is a weird one because, as we've said, Blansky shows up in the 50s, goes to her show, and by the time she gets off her bus, it's the 70s, and it's got two of the same actors from the, you know, it's got and then Pinky Tuscadero shows up and has not aged at all from that situation. Okay.
Is Waverly Wonders part of Blansky's Beauties?
Whoa. Boy, I'm not. Ooh,
because it's Nancy Walker.
Yeah,
but is it something different?
I think it's something different. Okay. I'm sorry. There's the Happy Days cartoon. There's the Laverne and Shirley cartoon. There's the Mork and Mindy cartoon. Those all Heaven Help Us. Was that the
you got me on?
One?
I don't even remember that.
It was one. It was the episode that we'll just say it brief because we talked about it before on the show. Chachi sells his soul to the devil's nephew, and Fonzie saves him with the help of Random, an angel who aids him, and then the angel. Goes and like raises some disadvantaged kids
in Chicago.
Cool.
In Chicago.
I'm tracking that one down on YouTube tonight.
You know where you can
better than the fish.
If you go to,
you know where you can find the Sneaky Dragon website.
Yeah, Sneaky Dragon website.
All right, I'm going to find it.
We have
it
clips
then.
For all those shows.
Oh, fantastic.
On it.
Because I did watch the first episode of Fish on YouTube because it was a
Fish spinoff of Barney
Miller.
Barney Miller with the Todd what's his
Bridges.
Name?
Todd Bridges. On it?
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, well let's quit talking about trivialities for a second here.
Okay. Okay, there's the show.
I just wanted to say one more thing, which is that show. What's the Urkel show?
Family Matters?
Family Matters, which is a spinoff of Die Hard.
I thought it was a spinoff. spinoff of Die Hard.
A little known. Yeah.
The dad is a cop.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and the last time you saw the dad as a cop was in Die Hard. Yeah. There's nothing in Die Hard that says he does not have a family.
Holy crap.
So I always consider that that's an unofficial spinoff of Die Hard.
Wow.
Is Family Matters. Please continue, David, with you've got something serious.
I have
to
something
say.
Serious I want to talk about, because we brought it up very early on in the show. I brought it up. And I think the audience is thinking, what about Hot Tub Time Machine?
Okay.
All right.
Because that movie stuck in my craw, I got to say. No offense.
No, I thought you were really good in a good way. Obviously, it's stuck in a bad way.
I thought you were really good, and I really enjoyed it. And, it had
Crispin Glover.
Had Crispin Glover, who's always good because he's crazy. But the ending of that movie drives me batty, because someone goes back in time, meddles with the past.
Yes.
And when they go back, their whole lives have changed. So suddenly, John Cusack, who wanted to go out with this woman, is now long time married to her.
Yes.
He has no memories. He didn't live his life with her. He didn't meet her.
Right.
He didn't have that wonderful falling in love, honeymoon, that glorious time of your life when you just have sex every 2 seconds and life is the greatest thing ever.
David, you're doing it wrong.
Am I?
And now I had it again.
Before you settle down.
Just put on the astronaut outfit.
Before you settle down into life. I'm not saying that.
Can I just call this Tang?
And suddenly he's at this point in his life where he's come back and goes, oh, I'm married to her, which is great, but I barely know this person. And
I think the movie you really wanted to watch was The Vow. I don't think Hot Tub Time Machine was for you.
I know. There's parts of it that were enjoyable.
Do you know what
would
solve that problem?
That
is
awful.
If, all of a sudden he starts getting the memories. The memories start coming to him.
Yeah, I guess
him.
So.
That's very sweet.
But who cares?
But who cares then?
If you're not living them out, they're just memories. Oh. I guess,
might as well just
be a brain in a vat.
So nothing matters that's happened to you in your life in the past.
Well, but you
all
might
as, you've got is the memories.
But if all there are is memories, you might as well just be a brain in a vat, as I just said. Because there's nothing that you lived. You didn't live through them. You just have memories
of
them.
You're thinking of Ronnie Dobbs, which ends with a brain in a vat. Where you find out that the whole story has been told by a brain in a vat.
Okay.
That is the ending to the Ronnie Dobbs story.
What is the Ronnie Dobbs story?
That's Run, Ronnie, Rub.
Oh, okay.
Run, Ronnie, Rum.
Okay, well, Run, Ronnie, Run.
David Koechner, and then it ends with his floating head, I believe, in a jar.
Okay. Well, I mean...
I'm just telling you the story.
There's a classic, but he experienced those things. Is it all told from the point of view of a brain in a vat?
Okay, let me just ask first, are you blaming Michael for this
movie? I am really upset at Michael about this.
Okay, Michael, you have 1 minute to rebut.
Yeah. Fuck you. No, I... Yeah, the rest
that
of my
was Michael with a commentary
back.
Track for Hot Tub Time Machine.
No, I think, as far as I'm concerned, I think, it's funny because I did read a few reviews when it came out that had similar kind of, these people... Shall I call them, I don't know, geeks, nerds, whatever you want to call them? No, but it was about time travel films. And you're going, that's not how it works. That's not how it's supposed to be. And I went, I don't think they cared in this. There's
no, I don't care about how it's supposed to be.
Jokes and stuff. So I don't think to come to the end, there's certain times when I'll let things go. Suspension of disbelief.
I can't do that.
And go, whatever. I don't care. I had a good ride.
I'm a bitter movie viewer. I just spend the
whole time. I enjoy being on it. My day there, I will tell you a quick little story about that.
Sure,
it was really funny because when you went into the audition, we had to improvise. And the director, Steve Pink, I was very intimidated because he'd co-written Gross Point Blank, which is a great movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he wrote and directed...
The other one with John Cusack where he works in the record store, High Fidelity.
Yeah, High Fidelity. Yeah.
Also. Really.
And so I'm like, oh man, this is a big deal. So I go in and I audition for a couple of different parts. And one was a waiter in a mining themed restaurant. So you got a helmet with a light on it. And so it was just make up whatever you want. So I just kind of rambled. And I prepared some stuff. I don't know if that's fair. Get me kicked out of ever being in any improvisational anything saying.
Right.
But I kind of was, okay, well, if I'm in a restaurant, I need to think of certain items that we have. So I'm going in now. I got called back and auditioned for the guy at the front counter.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, what kind of stuff would we have in case they want to know? And so for the day of filming, he said, I want, you got the part. I want you to be prepared to improvise and just be on your feet. And I was like, okay. So I started kind of memorizing things that we might have, hot stone massages and different things that I thought I can pull out of somewhere in case.
Yeah.
So I know what kind of world I live in to be able to improvise in it. And once we got there, Rob Corddry and Craig Robinson, who my scene was with, both mostly Corddry, is just rattling stuff off at me. But all I had to do was basically be going, oh yeah, no, Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always expected of me. Yeah. And when we finished filming, the director came up to me and shook my hand, and he was just going, he goes, you were awesome. He said, every time I wanted to do something, I wanted you to do something. You did it before I asked. And it was a great compliment because he said, you never made a meal out of it. You knew it wasn't about you. And I was just, oh, thank you. But I was so, like, nervous about doing it because I really did think I was going to have to play ball with that guy. And I don't know. You'd probably feel at home.
Nah.
Wouldn't you?
I don't feel at home anywhere.
No, but if you were going to improvise, if you knew that Rob Corddry was going to step up on Ian's stage a blues and improvise singer. With you, you would feel comfortable, wouldn't you?
You do know that you're there to service his character.
Yeah.
Like, you would not want to, like, throw in a real zinger unless you're super set up and it's like, there's no way around this. I got to say it. You really are. I think what you're doing is you're wanting to lob them gently back to him so he can smash them at you.
Yeah.
Then lob them gently back, smash them. It's the old improv.
It's like my job on Sneaky Dragon.
Yeah. Your job.
Have you ever been intimidated?
Intimidated?
Intimidated. No. Ever in your life? No, on stage like that? You're going to work with somebody and feel like, I don't know what it takes.
In improv? Yeah, I think so. I think when I did a show with Colin Mockery a little while ago, and yeah, there was a little of that. Just because the energy was different, and Ryan Stiles was also there, though I felt less nervous with him. But yeah, it was just... Not because I was like, ooh, though they were the people who were starting off when I was doing improv, like at Vancouver Theater Sports, they were the big shots.
Yeah, for sure.
When I was starting. But the energy of the crowd was just like so about them that it was like you had to kind of read that and you couldn't take focus too much to yourself. And if you did, not for long periods of time, because they really want to see these guys.
Yeah.
And I felt like my job in that show was to make them shine, which is really what you're supposed to do as an improviser anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that was intimidated, but I was thinking things through maybe twice or three times, whereas I'd normally go with my first idea.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And of course, I'm intimidated to be here with you.
Did you? Oh, I'm sure. Did you work with Robin Williams? Because didn't he come along?
No,
to...
I've missed most of the shows. I've met Robin Williams a couple of times.
Yeah.
But no, I never actually improvised with Robin Williams. I was a little intimidated when David Cross once came to a show, and I knew he was like in the audience.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he was one of my favorite sketch performers, so I wanted to be good. And I might have, you know, again, you think twice where you should probably just think once.
I would be intimidated by David Cross because I don't feel like I feel like he's very
tall.
Is he taller than we think?
No, not really.
I just feel he's very, but no, what's the word? Like just judgmental? Is that, you know what I mean? Like though, that feeling from him?
Though I did end up
he's
going.
He's not going to laugh at you.
But then I ended up going to lunch with him and Bob Odenkirk when the Sketchfest was here in town and our group was performing. And I actually kind of hung back a bit in that conversation because other people were there and they really wanted to talk to him. So I just like threw in things once in a while. And again, it's just like, I just rather would meet you on a different situation where we're all working together. I'd rather meet folks like that working than socially at first. And that was weird. And I'm a huge Bob Odenkirk fan as well. Mr. Show was an incredible influence. And that show and Kids in the Hall, again, an incredible influence. And I've met almost everyone from Kids in the Hall or worked with all of them. It's one of the nice things about doing stuff in Canada is eventually you will meet almost everyone.
Yeah.
You know.
So there's only a few of us.
Yeah, over time you will meet everyone.
But that's going to make a difference, I think, when you're going to meet some of these people and you know that you're a comedian, you're working, so that once they find out, oh, you're one of us.
Yeah.
I had that. I remember I met, was brought to the set to with a friend of mine who was a real big fan of Chris Isaac. And my friend was working on the show and said, well, come by. We're filming out in Langley.
The Chris Isaac show?
Yeah.
Yep.
And said, come by and I'll introduce you to him. Like my friend, because she really wanted to meet him. So we came by and he came out and said, oh, this is my friend Mike. Hi, hey, nice to meet you. His friend's friendly. Yeah, how you doing? Nice to meet you. Mike's an actor too. He's on the Addams Family. And immediately it was like the thing went up.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You're an actor. Well, how's it going? But, yeah. And then it was like, you're a complete, I mean, not that he was not nice. He was incredibly nice, but there was just kind of like, Oh, you're one of us.
This is what the relationship is. Well, what I usually find is, I will say on stage, you know, your stage fright will go away if you're too busy to be stage fright. So you either are memorizing all your lines or you've got some stage business to do, or, you know, you're interacting with the other person, you throw your focus on the other person, you don't think about yourself and you don't get nervous.
Yeah.
But I find that with like meeting people too, is like, I love working with people because we're both too busy to establish, you know, what we are socially.
Yeah.
So it's just like, no, we're both just doing this scene. Okay, we're running the scene. I'm going to do my lines, or I'm doing a sketch show. You're asking me for opinions on something sketch-wise. Well, I'm going to throw this I can do. I'm in my sort of safe zone here. Here you go. And yeah, I really like working with people first before
I think that would make a big difference. Socialize
with them. Just going into a social situation, like we're all going to a party at this celebrity thing. Son of a fuck, do I not want to do that? Holy cow. But don't you like blah, 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 blah? I sure do, which is why I don't want to meet them in this situation.
Yeah.
We're at a party and we're all drunk and da, 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 and his status is high.
I'm the exact opposite of that.
Yeah?
That's where I love to meet people.
You like to murder people.
Well, you know me. That's my character.
Could I ask you a question? Both of you, I guess. Because we've got to wrap up pretty soon.
Yes, we do.
We're running out of time. And this is a time travel question.
Okay.
All right. So, Back to the Future. Probably one of the most famous time travel movies. So the scenario, were you familiar with it?
I saw it once, so let's make hope it's a general question.
Classic. All right. Classic David Denner.
Michael J. Fox's character goes back in
time. Marty McFly.
Stops his dad from meeting his mom, or like having the first kind of contact with his mom. Yeah, he saves his dad, I believe, from a car accident. He gets hit by the car.
I thought that he introduces the two of them together.
Okay. You're way ahead in the movie.
Okay, sorry. Right.
Here's what happened.
I thought you were seeing the whole plot of the movie.
His dad and mom met because his mom, he got hit by a car. Mom nursed him back to health.
Yeah.
That's how dad and mom met.
He
pushed his dad out of the way. Now mom's nursing him to health. She's having a crush on him. He's looking at the picture of himself. I'm never going to be born. It's all fading away.
Yeah.
Okay. So Michael J. Fox in that situation is like, I've got to get my parents back together. I've got no other choice.
I better play Chuck Berry songs.
Yeah. Meanwhile, mom has got the hots for him.
Yep.
And is trying to seduce him, creepy Oedipus thing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question to you. Given that situation,
would you do it?
Would you? Well, this is the thing. If you knew that you couldn't get your dad and mom together, would you just have to fuck your mom and just have an inbred version of yourself be born? Because genetically, it would be close. It would be pretty close. That's the only way you could get things going.
Is that what happens in that Futurama, that Roswell episode?
Well, in Futurama, Roswell that ends well, he ends up sleeping with his grandmother.
Yeah.
Yeah, and becomes his own grandpa.
I'm my own grandpa.
That's similar. Right.
Oh. But would that, in that scenario, would that be the plan B?
Plan B.
I just want to say that.
When I was 14 or something, you're thinking, that's got to be plan B. It's got to be plan A plus.
Especially if your mom's Leah Thompson.
Yeah, I just want to say that I have less complicated masturbatory fantasies than Ian does.
Right. Here's what it is. Run the episode of I Dream of Jeannie.
Mine's just McCloud.
What am I seeing? You're seeing nothing.
McMillan.
Boom, 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 boom. Back in the bottle. Is that like the closet? A little bit. It's a little bit. All right, let's wrap it up then. That's as awkward as it's going to get.
I just want to say one thing before we finish.
All right, please do.
It's, you know, we're talking about two people that produced Gross Point Blank, which is a really good movie.
Yes. Yeah.
High Fidelity, which is a really good movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Hot Tub Time Machine, and I'm getting in trouble for criticizing it.
Yeah. Which has a great
scene.
Fuck
you guys.
Which has a great scene. All right. We all do our plugs at this point.
Yep. Yeah. Ian, what are you doing in
July?
In July.
Here's the July. We're not shooting this. We're recording this at a different time.
Hey, don't break the third wall.
I'm not breaking. I mean, breaking the
the third wall.
I'm talking about time.
Oh, okay.
That's the fifth dimension? Is that what you're talking
about? No, that's up that was in a beautiful
up
balloon.
Up in your beautiful balloon.
Yeah, that's good dimension.
That was the fifth dimension.
Sir?
Please don't pop this
last
beautiful balloon.
Night. I couldn't get to sleep at... Okay, sorry.
No. No. what are you up to in July, Michael?
I'm free. What do you got going? No, I got nothing. I've got nothing. Going to Portland to a wedding.
Okay. Is there any place online that people can see stuff that you have done that you were okay with? First of all, rent Hot Tub Time Machine.
I guess you can put a link on it, but I put up a couple of our old sketches from the early 90s that my friends and I used to do on stage in White Rock.
Now, is any of your friends related to David?
Yeah, all of them are David's cousins. No, one of them is.
We sit around the pickle barrel.
I told you.
How many cousins we need in this sketch? We's all cousins.
That's right. It's a rural area. Did we not make that clear?
Let's draw pickles for parts.
No molasses.
That's the name of our group.
No molasses. That's the name of the group. No molasses.
No molasses.
One of the guys that I worked a lot with, Jason Dedrick, is David Dedrick's cousin.
Nice.
So that's how I got
He's a heck of a guy. Shout out to Jason.
Yeah, shout out to him. He'll be listening to this, of course. Yeah, he listens to everything.
And I met him while I was a guest on your show, which was Roundtable. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
That's right. My short-lived late-night talk show.
For those of you that didn't see the show, Michael would dress as King Arthur, make the rest of us dress as medieval characters, and we discuss current events as we ate giant slabs of meat.
Oh, and why didn't you tell me that then? It would still be on the air.
But you would only take one bite and throw it over your shoulder.
That's right. And I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot. Anyway, and I'm doing...
Jason on that show, he drank a mean cup of coffee.
He did. Oh, he did. Yeah, he was the court jester.
If you want to come see me do sketch, I do sketch with a group called Titmouse at the Cosmic Zoo, third Thursday of the month. And if you want to listen to some other podcasts, I do some comedy on The Irrelevant Show, CBC Radio. You can listen to it on the radio if you want, but you can also listen to it at your leisure on the podcast. That is The Irrelevant Show, CBC Radio. And I think that brings us to an end.
That brings me to me. I'll be in England in July.
Oh, pip, pip.
I will be I'll be looking for scalpers selling tickets for Olympic events.
What is the main event that you want to go see?
Funny you say that, because it would be an equitation of some sort. So it would be I think we would like to see the three-day event. Three-day eventing.
Teabagging?
Teabagging, also known as teabagging. That's right. Three-day eventing and teabagging. Those are the two things we're looking for, people.
Yeah.
And hopefully McMillan is there.
All right. That's very similar to the sexual term bangers and mash.
That's true. All right. A bit of Cockney slang, McMillan.
After mash. There's a spinoff of mash.
Oh, yeah. All right. No, wait a second. Quickly. The mash spinoffs. Go.
After mash, radar, Trapper John MD.
Okay. I'm sorry. Hot. Technically, Trapper John MD is not a spinoff of the TV show. It's a spinoff of the movie. But thanks for playing, Michael.
Just a second. There's flashbacks at the pilot episode.
That's nice. Michael.
You guys forgot Flo.
I did. That's true.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Let's do another one for safety.